Hello, everybody, and welcome again to a MANCAD British Academy of Audiology podcast. As you probably know by now, MANCAD stands for Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, and we're located at the University of Manchester in the UK. I am Gabrielle, or Gabby Saunders, and I'm a Senior Research Fellow at MANCAD, and I moderate our podcasts. We discuss various topics associated with hearing and audiology that we hope are relevant to anyone interested in hearing and hearing loss, whether you're someone impacted by hearing loss, you're an audiologist, a researcher, a student, or whatever. We do a podcast each month. It lasts anywhere between 20 and 30 minutes. And we post an audio recording along with a transcript on our University of Manchester web pages. Now on to today, Kai Oos will be discussing Towards Interprofessional Education and Collaborative Practice, the End of Tribalism. It's a subject I know she's passionate about, and I'm sure that's going to come across in the podcast. So Kai's a reader in audiology at the University of Manchester and MANCAD teaching lead. And before we go further, I'm going to ask Kai to tell us a bit more about her background. Over to you, Kai.
Thank you, Gabby. Hello, like I said, I'm Kai and I'm a reader in audiology. And as for my background, I'm actually a paediatrician by background. And I 22 years ago, I came to Manchester to do my PhD, and I had absolutely no intention of staying here. But then I got invited to help with the evaluation of newborn hearing screening program implementation. So Professor John Bamford invited me, and I couldn't say no. I thought, oh, I will just stay a couple of more years. This is so exciting. And well, here I am. And the interesting thing is that this first experience was very interprofessional. So I would say that my interest in interprofessional collaborative practice is really coming from that time.
Interesting. Well, I think we're very lucky to have you at Manchester.
Thank you.
So on to today's topic of interprofessional education and collaborative practice. Before we start discussing the pros and cons, if there are any, I think it would be really helpful to make sure we're all on the same page as to what we're discussing. So first of all, when you say interdisciplinary education, what do you mean?
Well, that's a really good question. I was actually looking for what those different words mean, because there are so many different terms that are being used. And I was really interested to understand what are the differences. There are some differences, but there is also quite a lot that is being used interchangeably. So I will actually use the World Health Organization definition that interprofessional education is an experience that occurs when students from two or more professions learn about, from, and with each other. And I think it's a really beautifully put definition. So this is what I mean when we talk about interprofessional education.
And what about collaborative care?
Okay, collaborative care is when multiple health workers from different professional backgrounds work together with patients, families, carers, and communities to deliver the highest quality of care across settings.
So can you tell me why are they important and how do they relate to one another?
Well, first of all, let's start with the end, so to say. Why is collaborative practice important? Because actually interprofessional education prepares learners for collaborative practice. And collaborative practice is important because actually it is believed to lead to improved access to health interventions, to improved health outcomes. It makes better use of the resources. It reduces incidence and prevalence of disability. And actually, it has also been shown to increase job satisfaction, reduce stress and burnout of health professionals. So I think we agree these all sound like really good things.
They do. And so you can't reach that point unless you have the interdisciplinary education. In the
exactly.
First.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, where did your passion for this come?
Well, passionate about it mainly because I'm passionate about the education that we provide to our learners. And I believe that interprofessional education is a crucial part of that education. I have a range of experiences. Some of them are bad, and I think it's actually good to have bad experiences as well, because then you know what good looks like. The bad ones have been very tokenistic. It usually has been the case when learners from different programs just sit in the same room and tick, interprofessional education has been achieved, even though I don't think it makes any sense. But I've also been involved with rather gigantic faculty-wide interprofessional leadership workshops that focus on scenarios of critical incidents where students across different programs have to really meaningfully work as a team and solve problems. So these are some of my experiences. I have others as well, which are more fun and creative. I hope we will come back to that later.
Have you got any experiences from your time as a pediatrician?
Definitely, I had some because I think it is impossible to work without working with others. You even if you don't do anything very special to achieve it, you will be working with nurses, with physiotherapists, with all sorts of different professionals. So yes, I certainly did have this experience. I probably wasn't even thinking that it was interprofessional collaborative working. It just was.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So how about for audiology?
Yeah, I mean, again, my interest as a pediatrician is obviously mainly in pediatric audiology. And as I said, this my experience with different screening teams and the implementation team was a beautifully interprofessional, I would say transprofessional experience, and I will come back to what that means later. So that was very, very collaborative. But also, for example, my interest is in auditory neuropathy spectrum disorder, and I can't really think of many diagnoses, so to say, that really require more interprofessional collaborative working, because especially when we have children with complex needs, you do need the whole team of different people, and very importantly, the family be involved with decision making and supporting the child and the family. But obviously, there are many others in audiology. I think that you know, for example, in tinnitus, in balance patients, with adults with diverse needs, and maybe actually working with the elderly is probably from the public health perspective the most important one, because the elderly have so many different medical and social and other needs, and they all have to be taken into account. So I think there are plenty of experiences. And actually, I think that audiology is by nature quite transdisciplinary. If you think of the academic and professional background of people who end up in audiology, unless they do audiology as their undergraduate course, you have such a wealth of different backgrounds. Look at MANCAD, for example. We have a richness of backgrounds. We have engineers and teachers of the deaf and psychologists and neuroscientists and psychoacousticians, and I have medical background, and there are all sorts of different backgrounds, and they all bring something very, very valuable to the table. And don't forget that our patient involvement, we have been doing it for a very long time, even before we had a fancy label for it. So I think that audiology is a really sort of collaborative working, is programmed into the very fabric of audiology.
Now, do you think in the average clinic, is that people call upon others, or is it that you need a team to manage the individual?
I think it's a very mixed picture. I know that in pediatric audiology, it's there are actually those collaborative teams, and they have been in place for a very long time. And I know that newborn hearing screening program team was really pushing for it. So I think that it's not to say that it couldn't be better, but I think that this is relatively well sort of established. In other areas, I think it's the picture is very patchy. There are some examples of very good practice, but we also know that there are some areas where it's really a big issue. I remember a couple of years ago we had a really interesting case conference that our clinical doctorate students were doing, and they were all talking about balance patients who are quite complex patients. And one theme that came through the whole all of their presentations was not just the lack of collaboration, actually the lack of communication. So it was really quite alarming. So as I said, I think there are some pockets of excellent practice, and there is definitely a long way to go to improve.
So before you gave a big list of pros of interprofessional education and collaborative practice, are there any downsides?
I think we should be very wary of tick box exercises. I think that happens a lot. And so that is especially in the sort of educational domain. When it comes to interprofessional practice, I think there are sometimes different political and structural barriers and hierarchical issues, and they can cause a bit of a problem.
Another thing that, I mean, I have read about, and I'm wondering what you think, is when you have a team, that it can be difficult if somebody isn't kind of the known leader of the team.
Mm.
And nobody takes full responsibility for the case because nobody is in charge, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be an issue. I think that the sort of there can be, you know, power issues and things like that. And that's what I meant about the sort of hierarchical issues a little bit.
Yeah, I guess and another thing I was just curious what you think about is where one person's job ends and the next one starts. And I guess what comes to my mind right now, and I know it's a hot topic, is, you know, who should be doing cognitive screening of elderly? And is that interdisciplinary practice? If audiologists start doing cognitive screening, is that outside of what should be done? Should they, you know, where does that fit in? I'm kind of curious your opinion on that.
No, I think you're absolutely right that there may be some areas where there is almost like a little bit of a, I don't know what's a good word, like a competition. Everybody wants to do that. But at the same time, there are also some gaps that nobody wants to cover. So I think these professional boundaries and negotiating responsibilities is a very important sort of competency in interprofessional education, and people should understand that.
Now, you know, we've talked about this in audiology. I presume it would make sense for providers in all healthcare disciplines to have interdisciplinary education then.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think it's, and it's not only about learning those competencies. I think it's really a sort of almost like a philosophical thing, that understanding the need to challenge tribalism. I think that's... Yeah, I actually, that was something that I have thought about it a lot. When I was involved in a newborn hearing screening program, then we did a little study looking at sort of interviewing different professionals about what they were doing, but also about their perceptions of other professionals. And I was a bit surprised, maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was a bit surprised how sort of that there was this underlying almost like they whoever they were, other group, other tribe, don't do as much and don't know as much. So I was quite surprised that there was this underlying, you know, we are the only ones who are having to work really hard and know what we are doing, and others aren't. I'm exaggerating a little bit to make a point, because nobody said it quite as bluntly as I just did. But I think this is really something worth thinking about. And I have thought about it, especially in the education setting, is that sometimes when people are talking to the students, we make either little comments or little jokes about some other professions, and we don't mean anything bad about bad with it. It's just a little comment. But I think we should be a little bit more wary of that. I think this is a kind of thing of you know, we do impact how our students are seeing other professions. And that may be quite a small thing, but students do pick up on that, and we enculturate them into tribalism. And I would very much like to challenge, especially people who are educators, to not do it.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a perfect, while we're talking about students and education. So as a teaching lead for ManCat, I'd love to ask you about your experiences with interdisciplinary education. And you did allude to it a bit earlier. How's it done at the University of Manchester?
Actually, when I sort of, at first, when you said that you wanted to talk to me, I was mainly focusing on this faculty-wide interprofessional leadership training that we do, because that's what I see as a very traditional, conventional way of doing it. It's very grand. It's sort of focusing on those different critical incidents. I think it's, when it's working well, it's actually really quite a lovely experience to be part of. But then when I started thinking, I thought, gosh, I have actually quite interesting other experiences. And one of the most fun things that I've been involved in was interprofessional workshop on conflict management with scientist training program students from different specialisms. And it was an absolutely amazing, transformative experience, even for me, even though I was a facilitator there. It really, I would call it life-changing. It was just absolutely wonderful. And it was a whole day workshop. We were working with somebody who is a professional conflict resolution expert, and then all these different students from different specialisms were working together for the whole day. Then I've also had some
Can I just ask you a bit about that? So how did the fact they were from different specialisms play into the conflict resolution?
Because we were talking about different situations that were, you know, where conflict could happen in a clinical setting. And because these students had already been in working clinically, they could bring some clinical experience into this workshop. And that was very, very helpful. Yeah, because remember, the students that we have are really completely different. We have students who are mainly, who are specialized in all sorts of clinical science fields that are lab-based. We have patient-facing trainees. So it's really quite interesting to bring these learners together, because they start off with very different expectations. And when we first started, very often for example, biochemistry trainees would say, we don't do people. And it was actually quite interesting to get to the point when they realized, well, hello, you are people, your colleagues are people, you have, surprise, surprise, you do people. So, and having these conversations all together is really quite an interesting experience for everybody. Then what has been equally interesting is interprofessional learning that we do with our clinical doctorate students, where we mainly focus on patient public involvement and engagement and how to consult public about big changes in clinical services, in science. And that again is a very interesting experience because we have a wealth of different students from different backgrounds, and they have a very meaningful conversations on how they communicate their science, their specialism to public in general, to the patients, and then they bounce the ideas from one another because of their different experiences. They come to this day with very different expectations and very different experiences. And then together with Professor Cynthia Morton, we run a workshop where students do a play and bring out their inner thespian. And that's about dilemmas around genetic screening, and they play roles of different healthcare providers, politicians, parents, stakeholders. And then there is quite a vigorous debate at the end, and again they bring their own experience, because remember, the clinical doctor students usually are quite experienced. Many of them are quite experienced clinicians, so it's a really, really vigorous debate and actually pretty cool. And the one more thing that I wanted to say that I was thinking about is that recently we've also done MSc dissertations that have been supervised from by people. For example, a good example is an audiologist and teacher of the deaf, and they supervise students who work as a tandem, and one of them is an audiology student and the other is a deaf education student. And that sort of collaboration, I think, is also extremely valuable for students.
Yes, and I'm going to just bring you back to something that I know you mentioned earlier about patient safety incidents, interdisciplinary. Would you, for people who don't know what you were referring to, will you describe that a bit?
Yeah, so it's a probably one of the most common ways of doing interprofessional training is sort of giving students either some sort of real life simulation, a role play, or in our case, it is a critical incidents where there are, mistakes have been made by different members of the team. There are issues that are relevant for all the different professions that are represented in this interprofessional training session. And then they have to work together to figure out what went wrong and most importantly, what could be done in the future to avoid these kind of problems. And that's I think a really nice way for students to work together, and they have to ask about each other's professions in order to make sense of this this critical incident.
Yeah, that really makes, that seems a very concrete way of getting point across kind of thing. I like that.
And that's what we do with undergraduates. The other examples that I was talking about are either with postgraduates or doctorate students, and then you can be, I think, a little bit more creative in a way. I think with undergraduates, it's better to have a very concrete way of going about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So then, have you had the opportunity to sort of look at the outcomes of these kind of classes?
Yeah, well, that's a really funny one, because actually we, even when we did this interprofessional training for those undergraduate students, we did a little sort of, we even wrote it up. It was published in some kind of pharmacy journal, but that mainly looked at the perceptions of the students. So it didn't really address whether, you know, how beneficial it is. And that is, if you look around the in the literature, then actually the evidence is, let's be completely honest, relatively poor. That's not to say that there isn't benefit, but it's not a very trivial thing to measure it. So I would say that it would probably be, for all sorts of different reasons, a good idea to promote a culture of trying to assess the benefit, because I think that sometimes people don't really put a very high value on interprofessional education. And if we could actually see the benefits of that, it would be much easier to convince people that it's a worthy thing to invest into.
How about at the next level, when students have graduated? Do you have any feel for how healthcare professionals get to apply this kind of knowledge?
I think it's very commonly used, not only with students, but also with people who are already working in healthcare. In some ways, the examples that I brought to the clinical doctorate students, they have all been working clinically for quite a while, some of them for, you know, many decades. But I know that trusts are often organizing different interprofessional education training sessions. So I think it is definitely something that should be part of continuing education, because things are changing all the time. The needs and the expectations are changing all the time. So I definitely don't think it is something that we do it once for undergraduates, then we can tick it off and forget about it forever. That should be an ongoing process.
Great. So on that note, have you got any tips or suggestions for someone who's listening who is either an educator or maybe a head of a clinical department, how they could kind of initiate or promote collaborative practice?
I mean, I would like to come back to this tribalism. I know I'm sort of a bit repetitive, but I think that we should all challenge our, I think tribalism in general is an interesting phenomenon in the society, but let's put that aside for one moment. I'm talking about professional tribalism, and I think this is something that we should all think about a little bit and challenge it ourselves, and especially when we work with students, like I said earlier. When it comes to interprofessional education, then my overall approach would be creative and have fun. I think that's really important. And I also think that we should aspire for trans-professional practice. And by that, I mean that we should go beyond those professional perspectives and integrate the natural, social and health sciences in a humanities context. And I don't think we do that enough. I think that would be really important. And very importantly, a patient and their family and communities should be in the center of all these collaborative teams. So that would be my main message.
Final question then, and maybe you've already just said it, is what is the key message you want listeners to take away?
This is the key message, that even though there are many, many benefits of interprofessional training, interprofessional education and collaborative working, for the teams themselves. And as I said earlier, it sort of is good for increased job satisfaction, and that is not at all unimportant. I think at the end of the day, we do that because we want our patients to have better care, and they are the center of that whole program here.
And that's the reason for all of this, ultimately.
Yeah, exactly.
Completely agree. Well, thank you, Kai, for sharing your time and your thoughts.
You're most welcome.
For the listeners, there's going to be a transcript available, as I said earlier, and we'll include the references that Kai referred to during the podcast. If you have any follow-up questions or want to give feedback, share ideas for future topics, please send me an email. My email address is on the ManCab website, and it will be in the transcript. I hope you enjoyed our discussion and that you'll come back to hear the next podcast, and I'll get the word out when the next one is available.